being weighed and then mitigations being proposed and trying to strike a balance with the design of the site that does a number of things, that considers how the site is viewed from Summit Lake in terms of the voluntary measure being taken to preserve mature trees on the property, in terms of limiting site grading by proposing a one-way looping road so that we didn't have to, you know, clear a big chunk of the hillside to accommodate a wide road with a cul-de-sac, in terms of site safety, working with the fire department. We've got fire hydrants, we've got provisions for no parking on the road. In terms of stormwater management and erosion control, putting measures in place during construction activities for erosion control, putting stormwater management structures in place that manage stormwater, treat it for water quality, slow down the velocity of the water, so that it's discharged in a manner to the lake, you know, in a way that's consistent with the pre-construction levels and with high water quality. In terms of just every aspect of the design, trying to be thoughtful and careful about how the houses are sited. And so I'd be happy to run through the various portions of SEAKER and get into the details of that, but it's entirely up to
No, I think that would be good.
Okay. Let's see. So, I don't know if you guys want me to just like go down through the list.
Sure.
Okay. So, I mean, everyone's seen the development proposal before. It's a roughly 22-acre parcel, and as we have been presenting for some time now, it's a proposed 16 acres for 16 new single-family homes. The site is set back off of Summit Lake, and the land between the development and the lake is already protected open space that that the village has control of. As part of this development proposal, we would add to the open space in the area in a manner that's almost twice what is required by the code, and we would construct a one-way looping road, so it's two-way for about the first 500 feet and then splits and goes one-way. What that does, and we showed that in our visual profile that we had provided to the board, was it allows the road to go in and work with the terrain, so the land slopes uphill from the lake, and by having a one-way looping road, we have a lower portion of the road and a higher portion of the road, and that allows us to leave land in between where the mature trees will stay, and that will become open space land that the village will have. And that provides screening for the houses that are on the uphill side. And so I think that's really in keeping with respecting the neighborhood and trying to be sensitive about the siting of the site. We've heard a lot of concerns about the one-way looping road and whether or not it meets fire code. Very early on in the process, we proposed this one-way looping road as a means to try and respect the land and be considerate of the development. But we recognized that there were concerns about safety, and so we reached out to the fire department. And what we proposed was a roadway that has a 12-foot paved width. So that is the surface for driving on. And then in addition to that, 2 feet of shoulder on either side, so that's 16 feet of width that is available for vehicles to traverse in a one-way fashion. We reviewed the fire code, and the fire code does not contemplate a one-way road. And so when we contacted the Division of Codes in New York State, they said, you're right, the code does not anticipate a one-way road. You need to talk to the local fire chief. You need to talk with him about what he's comfortable with and whether or not he can serve the area that has the one-way road. So we did that. We provided a computer model that simulates the turning movement of the largest piece of equipment that the village owns. And in fact, I think it's larger than the largest piece of equipment. So we want to be conservative in case you ever upgrade to a ladder truck. So there's more than enough room for that vehicle to traverse. We met with the chief, we talked that through. He was concerned about on-street parking, And so we will have a provision that there will be no on-street parking, so that there's not any potential conflict. The one-way road, you know, in an emergency could be accessed from both directions, if need be. And there's parking for each residence provided at each individual house site. So, you know, we're trying to strike a balance here, public safety, environmental protection. There's been, in addition, some concern about impact to the historic district. We have had extensive conversations with the State Office of Historic Preservation. So just so you understand our full process, what we normally do with any project is we, when there's a development proposal, we initiate an inquiry with the State Office of Historic Preservation through their cultural resources system. And we let them know what is the scope and scale of the project that we're proposing and where is the project located. And normally the Office of Historic Preservation comes back to you with two things. One is about cultural resource issues. So that's like archaeological resource issues, so native people. And the other is historic resource concerns. So for archaeological purposes, the State Office of Historic Preservation had no concerns. So they issued a letter of no effect for archaeological resources. And for historic resources, they said, we want you to be aware that there's a National Register eligible historic district, and you are going to be partially in that district. And so the historic district encompasses the east side of Summit Street. And so the portion of the proposed new access driveway or access road into the development would front on Summit Street, of course, because that's the point of connection, and would extend back into the property for the construction of the new homes. That distance is about, like I said, 450 to 500 feet back from Summit Street. So Summit Street is where the historic district will be. The houses are 450 to 500 feet back. So we let Chabot know that that was the case, and they said, okay, that's fine. We'd like to know what you've got in terms of architecture. So architectural plans have not been developed yet in detail, but we talked it over with Jock and his team, and what they are committed to and have committed to here at this board is architecture that is, we've told the Chabot, modern, of course, more modern houses, but using natural materials and using a coloration that has a natural color palette. So we're not going to have, you know, day glow pink houses out there. And so we shared that information back with Chippo, and they sent us a letter saying, when you have those plans, please send us the architectural plans. We'd like to look at that further. What we did in the intervening time was we conducted the line of sight analysis from the north side of Summit Lake, where we laid out in a computer model, a 3D model, where the houses are located and where the existing vegetation, so the protected land from the lake to the south end of the subdivision, and then the land that runs through the Woods Road, where that, excuse me, with some photos that we took from across the lake, showed a cross section through the development, and then also showed some photo simulations of what the houses would look like within the wooded development. With that information sent to SHPO, they sent us an updated letter and said, we believe you, it's our determination that there's no effect on the historic district from the development. So we feel that that has closed the door as far as SHPO is concerned. Other issues that we have heard in terms of communications from the public pertain to natural resources and wildlife. As you know, when we first started the project, we had conducted a wetland survey out on the site, and we had a licensed biologist, Norbert Penzer, out on the site reviewing the site conditions. Those wetland areas have been mapped and flagged, and to the maximum extent practical, we have avoided them. So there's one place where we're crossing through with our access road where we'll potentially get into some wetlands and in the back of three of the lots, but we will be pursuing, assuming we finish this process here, we'll be pursuing a permit with the Army Corps for any impacts to wetlands. This area was also reviewed by the Natural Resources Heritage Program through an inquiry that we sent to them. Again, similar to the SHPO concerns, just laying out the proposal for development, how many houses, where is it located, what's the existing habitat. We received a letter back from SHPO indicating that they don't have any records of any species of concern within this development area. I'm sorry, I said SHPO, didn't I? I meant Natural Resources Heritage Program. Thank you for nodding your head at me. So Natural Resources Heritage Program sent us a letter back. That's the state's inventory of threatened and endangered species. In addition to making a query with the state, we also made a query with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service through their IPAC program. The information we got back from the IPAC program indicated that there are the potential for two bat species. One is threatened, one is endangered. I may mix them up. One is the northern long-eared bat, and the other is the Indiana bat. I believe the Indiana bat is the endangered one, and the northern long-eared bat is the threatened species. In the state of New York, the way you avoid impacts to bat species is to limit your tree clearing activities to the winter months when the bats are hibernating, and they hibernate in caves and other structures in the region. So that is something that we've agreed to do to avoid impacts to the bats. The third species that was listed in the IPAC report is just one that's being tracked right now for potential impacts, and that's monarch butterfly. It's not a threatened or endangered yet, but it is being reviewed. We do not have meadow space on the site currently, so there's not habitat necessarily for monarch butterflies. Interestingly, the development may actually help create more butterfly habitat in the wetland area. There'll be wildflower mixtures that'll be planted for the stormwater management area. So I think there's a potential to improve habitat there. We have heard some comments about bald eagles, and I have made some calls to DEC. When we made our Natural Resource Heritage Program inquiry, if there was bald eagle habitat, that would have been flagged on that inquiry. So there was no flagging of eagle habitat at that point in time, nor was it flagged by the IPAC, the federal Fish and Wildlife folks. So we went further, and we have looked at the village's farmscape ecology assessment for the Summit Lake area. And even that report, which I believe was completed in the last year or two, indicated that eagles are just occasional visitors to the lake area. So I think we've tried to do our diligence there. I've had a couple of projects that have had eagle habitat, and it's very evident when an eagle has a big nest somewhere. And there are very specific requirements for avoiding the nest site during particular times of the year. So I am 100% confident that if there were eagles on that property, it would have been flagged to us at this point, and we would have had to take mitigative measures. Other than that, just in terms of how the land will be built out on, Jock and his team have agreed to a series of restrictive covenants. I'm not the attorney, so I don't have all those completely nailed down. But they are covenants in place to help preserve the property and provide a framework for respectful neighbor activity, I think. So I think they're fairly reasonable. They include things like having a driveway light, having downward facing lighting, having neutral color palettes on the property, the provision around tree protection. So those covenants are proposed to be in place also. Not sure if there was anything else. I feel like I might need some water, but I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any other items that you want me to cover.
Now, the runoff will also handle the runoff that was already there from the other project, is that correct?
That's correct, yes. So the stormwater management system has to pick up some of the runoff from Overlook Court that hasn't been managed.
So in essence, that should reduce the runoff to the reservoir just
so
as it is, right?
The goal is to maintain the amount of water that goes to be the same But that the rate that it goes in not to increase. So we don't want to, we'll slow the water down, we'll capture, we'll hold it back, and then we'll release it more slowly. So more slowly flowing water is less damaging.
Any questions, board?
Yeah, I have a question. In response to the court ruling, was the right-of-way modified in any way?
We have been through a couple of iterations, and I believe what we could do is we can provide a 50-foot right-of-way with absolutely no problem at all. And I believe we showed that in a submission about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So a 50-foot right-of-way for the road is perfectly fine. As I had mentioned before, this center portion of the roadway would be under the village's control in the future anyway. But yeah, we can have 50-foot right-of-way, absolutely.
So that was in response to the court ruling? That occurred after the court ruling?
It did occur after the court ruling.
As far as the build-out, the road and everything will go in first, then as you sell a house, you'll build it, type of thing?
Now, the road itself, didn't the court rule that it was premature to talk about that? I mean, I don't recall that Judge Cobb said that there was any ruling on the road.
I don't know. I don't know, Rob, if you know, and I apologize. Being the engineer, I tend to get focused on the technical things, but...
Yeah, the court, and it was actually Judge Mott ruled that the any discussion on the fire access road within the subdivision right-of-way is premature.
Yeah, I mean, if you recall, the road, you know, the planning board evaluates the plan in terms of your subdivision regulations. We did go to a meeting of the village board to talk with them about a change in the roadway, discussing how it would mitigate some of the impacts to the view shed. So, you know, we wanted to see if that was something that they would endorse, and we did get that endorsement, and then we came back to you guys and proceeded.
Yeah, I'm not saying I have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I've talked to other firemen about it, and also I've talked to the chief about it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any reason why you want to the covenants rather than a HOA?
I don't know, Jock, are you able to answer that one in terms of the thought process there?
The covenants are a little bit easier than an HOA, and it's not a huge development, so we didn't think that it needed an HOA.
But they will have a say in what's going on, just like everybody else will.
Yeah, I mean, they have no more rights than everybody else in the village to say what's going on.
Anyone else?
So yeah, if the questions are done, I'd like to read the statement.
All right, let me just make sure they're done. Any more questions? No? Go ahead, Tom.
I prepared a written statement that I'd like to read, and this is in response to the overwhelming public comment that they weren't hearing enough from the board. So I just want to give some idea of what the board went through on this project. So, with well over 100 written pages of submitted comments, 2 hours of verbal comments from just the last public hearing, and a New York State Supreme Court judge's ruling that the approval process requires further review and clarification, one could describe this project as controversial. As a planning board member, I was struck by the frequency of requests to hear more from the planning board. This was true whether someone was fully in favor of the project or they found one aspect or all aspects unacceptable. Thus, as a new planning board member, I feel compelled to make this statement to quell the idea that this proposal was taken lightly. I had several sleepless nights over this one, and perhaps my fellow board members experienced similar anxiety and may be inspired to speak out as a result of this statement. So just a little on who I am. I spent an entire professional career in planning and architecture for both the public and private sectors, mostly on projects that defer to the value of the natural environment. One of my public sector positions called for the review of state environmental quality review applications, known as SEQR. So SEQR has three pathways, and I'm just doing this for the benefit of the public so that they understand it a little bit better. So type one, that's a long list of construction actions that automatically trigger an environmental review. And prominent on that list is, quote, 10 units or more of residential housing proposed on previously unaltered land, close quote. So the woods is 16 units. So that sounds like that should be in, but it isn't because the land had been previously rezoned for residential use. And that's number one. And number two, Philmont's comprehensive plan refers to the area as a new residential zone. Therefore, type one does not apply. Type two is an exhaustive list of actions that automatically exempt a project. In other words, it works in the negative. So this project does not fit into any of those exemptions. The third and final path is a catch-all for everything else called unlisted action. This is the path that keeps everyone up at night because the lead agency, in this case the planning board, must produce compelling evidence that the project will cause a significant adverse environmental impact. Those are four words used in that order to have a legal meaning. And it has to have that impact in at least one of the 19 different categories. By the way, the SEQR documents run close to 1,000 pages. So it's a very high bar to meet. So I'll give you an example. We had the view corridor in this case. That was the hillside adjacent to the south of the lake. So it is a view that everyone in the village loves. The village knows it well. But to be a significant adverse environmental impact, there are other questions you have to ask. How unique is it? Are there other hills that are similar to it? Is it a well-known landmark with a name? What is the degree of modification? So you would compare this hillside to, say, a Taconic Parkway scenic overlook, like the one just north of Philmont. That's purpose is for cars to go out and look at the Catskills. So it's a view that has a name. It's prominent. It can be used by anyone who has a car that on the parkway. So that if a developer wanted to put up a building just to the west of that, blocking that view, that would be a significant adverse environmental impact that meets the criteria where this does not. So I know that provides a lot of confusion for people, but that's the way it is. But putting SEQR aside for a moment, I was struggling with how did informed citizens concerned about the environment and a developer with a deep respect for the environment devolve into a row so contentious it ended up in court. My assessment is that the planning phase, and again, this is considering my background, was so severely truncated that it was practically non-existent. The concept sketch there was a concept sketch that went out with the initial announcement of this project. With the first emails in 2021, should have served as a baseline from which modifications would have been made, centered on community and professional reviewers' input. So this was just the bottom of this. You probably can't see it very well, but that is the sketch that went out with the email. If you overlay this concept sketch on the advanced civil engineering drawings that we have today, it's a near match with no recorded inputs, thus providing a planning stage never actually took place. Furthermore, and equally inconceivable, this is the first time I've heard an acknowledgement of the Farmscape Ecology Program Report that was produced in 2021. This is an extraordinarily valuable report. This exhaustive natural resource inventory and analysis completed by local experts intimately familiar with the site is based not exclusively on trees, but also the comprehensive ecology, including critical observations such as the location of breeding wood thrushes, a species identified as a conservation concern. This study, which includes mapping of the woods parcel, provides a precise roadmap of where new construction could be absorbed and where the environment is too sensitive for such modification. Unfortunately, we are presented with a uniform suburban subdivision with a fixation on second growth trees. And it lacks species identification, and it also lacks post-construction condition analysis. This report is free on the website, which you mentioned you looked at, but maybe it would help to look at it through. So this intransigence to accepting modification to a preconceived solution has metastasized beyond impacts on the environment. It has now entered the realm of legality and code compliance, leaving the village of Philmont and its taxpayers responsible for maintaining the resulting infraction. And I will quickly explain with my next two points, thereby completing my comments. So number one, the substandard road width must be addressed before any further action can be taken on this proposal. The safety deficiencies with the proposed width were accurately and ardently laid out by a Philmont volunteer firefighter in the last public hearing. So I have nothing to add to those specifics. I use his comments as the basis. However, I must comment on the applicant's response to the mention of the road width in the court ruling, which was to enlarge the right-of-way to suggest, which in itself, if you need to enlarge the right-of-way, this suggests future expansion. This squarely dumps the burden of eventual road widening on Philmont's taxpayers, and that's just simply unacceptable. So what's the likelihood that this will be a problem on this road? It's quite high. It only takes one incident to reveal the inadequacy of the road based on the firefighters' comments at the public hearing. In the last year, a new home burned to the ground before it was even occupied on that same hillside. This is not a glam camping proposal. It is a community for either well-off families to reside in or for investors to provide high-end rentals. Either group will be demanding, especially when they find out their insurance premiums are inflated because the homes face a substandard road. So please, the applicant needs to provide a scheme with legal width roadways. The last item is the covenants, which were so sloppily constructed that half of them are already covered by village ordinance, thereby confusing the issue of how they will be adjudicated. And the other half are amenity criteria, enforceable within the individual community itself. Standards such as house paint color, above ground pool prohibition, etc., enforced by the public municipality, but only in this wealthy enclave, but not the rest of Philmont, is discrimination. Public benefit to a specific group is discriminatory. The covenants need to be cleaned up. So to sum up, the first item about the environment needs going back to make up for a planning deficiency. However, there are huge benefits once you get the community on your side, which should be seriously considered. You do not want repeated phone calls to the governing agency every time your site is inadequately watered down or a bulldozer appears to have gone astray. And the second two items are easily curable and should not be a part of a positive vote until this is rectified. Thank you.
Anyone else? Rob, just for the record, what did Judge Cobb say about our review of Seeker?
Judge Mott. All right, let me go to it.
Mm-hmm.
fifth cause of action was a challenge to the SECRE. In the decision, it states, a court reviews SECRE determination on the administrative record to determine whether the relevant areas of environmental concern have been identified. The agency has taken a hard look at them and made a reasonable elaboration to support its determination. And there's some recitation to court cases there. It is not the court's role to weigh the desirability of the action or choose among alternatives, quote unquote. SECRE seeks, quote, a balance between social and economic goals and concerns about the environment by requiring an agency to engage in a systematic balancing analysis, with another recitation. Determinations are assessed in light of the rule of reason, and an agency's determination may be annulled, quote, only if arbitrary, capricious, or unsupported by substantial evidence. And there's another citation there. Here, contrary to the petitioner's contention, the planning board classified its SECRE action as unlisted at its January 19th, 2022 notice of intent to serve as lead agency. Further, the planning board's determination is rationally based, and the record demonstrates it identified, investigated, and discussed the project's impacts identified by involved agencies, engineering reviews, and public comment, addressed them prior to its final determination, and concluded there were no potentially significant impacts identified. It considered the viewshed as evidenced by a line of sight study with a conceptual rendering and generally referenced the covenants restricting conditioning the development of the subdivision. That was the discussion on SECRE.
So in essence, he's saying that we did what we were supposed to do.
Correct.
Any other questions? All right, then I would ask for a motion to approve the subdivision on the project as currently submitted with requested waivers for the road driveways as designed and requested by the applicant.
I'll make a motion.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
Who's that?
Rick. I have a motion and a second to accept the motion that I read. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Opposed?
No.
Subdivision's approved. All right, I guess that concludes our business. So I need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you for your effort on this. I know it was a lot of information to take in, but we appreciate you taking the time to review it all.
I didn't hear that, Brandy.
Oh, okay. Thank you for the time you took to review this. I know it was a lot of material. Thank you.
Now, these, I'm taking, are the... Jock, these are the ones that you want to have. These are the latest ones that I have.
Okay. I forgot. I'm going to go grab them right now.
These, I think, are the same. Well, I got them upside down anyway. But I think these walls.
You're
going to
need plans with a stamp block on them, right? So they can approve.
Yeah, I'm going to. I just want to know, are these the ones that you want to stamp?
Yes, we will get you.
Or you're going to get me no
full copies, yeah, signed and sealed, because we want to put our seal on them as well.
All right, so if you give me that, I'll come up here and stamp them as soon as you want.
Okay, all right, we'll let you know.
And yes. I got your email with the comments on the other resolution, revising it, and Paul's comments, and I've incorporated them, and I'll have him sign it tonight, but then we'll circulate it just to make sure there aren't any typos or anything in it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.